Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast. My name is Ben Jackson, I'll be your host. And this week it's just a two-man game with me and Scott. Scott, how are you doing this evening?
I'm good, Ben. How are you? Hello everybody.
Yeah, I'm all good, thanks. Unfortunately, Joris can't join us this evening. Even after Genk won, he's just too busy basking in the glory of that, maybe. I don't know. But yeah, he'll be back at some point soon and we'll be back as a trio. Obviously, the Challenger Pro League started this week, so we'll have a little bit of that to dive into. But first of all, we will go to Division 1. Results from this round of matches. Antwerp, they beat Kortrijk 6-0. Molenbeek beat Mechelen 1-0. Union continue their fine start to the season with a 5-1 win over Leuven. Anderlecht got a much-needed win against St. Truiden. Cercle Bruges now without Carlos Avina, who has left to Monaco. They lost 1-0 to Genk. Club Brugge dispatched Erpen 5-0. Charleroi and Standard Liège drew 1-1 in the derby. And then Gent beat Vestalo 3-1. Let's obviously start in Antwerp for their visit of Kortrijk. And I mean, Scott, this just was not a contest from start to finish. Antwerp completely like steamrolled them. Janssen with a really nice finish within 9 minutes after some nice play again from that man Ondrejka. He was linking up well with Gaston Avia. Avia's cross turned in by Janssen. Poor Martin Vazinski's then hit by the ball and sees it go in. He would end the game with a 3.2 on FootMob. And if you look at their defence for the FootMob ratings, I think this is the worst of a collective six-man kind of backline I've ever seen. The best rating was the new signing Opfler at 5.7. He got taken off after 41 minutes. So it just kind of sums it all up. So, Vazinski's own goal makes it 2-0. Janssen then gets his third. Just everyone falls asleep. Balakwisha puts the ball back over the top. He tucks it in. Just they weren't defending or marking at all, Kortrijk, in this one. They fall asleep again at the back post on the side that Opfer had been playing, but he'd been taken off because of how he was playing. Kirk steps in just to put that one in after assists from Ondrejka. Into the second half, Janssen makes it 5-0 after Kortrijk, just for some reason trying to play it out from the back when they're 4-0 down. They're not good enough to do that. They get dispossessed. Janssen scores. Mia then comes off the bench. 4 minutes later, he smashes in the sixth. This could have been 7, 8, 9, 10 if Antwerp really wanted. And in some ways, they did want. They were really good, to state the obvious. Kortrijk were dreadful. Scott, I've got another rant to go on, but I'll let you get kind of whatever you want to say about this game off your chest. But this was just, teams are going to lose big in matches, but I feel like at the beginning of the season, you really shouldn't be losing big because you should have some motivation still to kind of to perform and stuff. I get it, it's a lot less look further into the season, but at this point, losing 6-0, it's just like alarm bells ringing everywhere.
Yeah, well, they've had a really bad start to the season, Kortrijk, haven't they? I mean, Ed Still did say a couple of weeks ago, he wanted to make the point that they were obviously chasing their tail, as a lot of sides were on the recruitment. You know, we've been highlighting that a lot already in the opening 3 weeks. They were, in particular, chasing theirs because of the ownership situation that was hanging over the club, which has now been sort of, well, settled for now anyway, and that there hasn't been a change. That meant effectively there's nobody on recruitment. So I suppose the positive for Kortrijk this week, and it isn't even really linked to this game, since that pummeling at the Bossel, they've brought in 3 new players this week. The downside to those 3 new players is I'm not sure those 3 are going to make much of a difference. I don't really understand either signing particularly, especially today's one. Shea Ioyo is a particularly odd one in my view. I just don't see that has the whiff of do you want this player for a wee while about it. Very, very random stuff. I'm not sure psychologically what sort of lasting damage a result like that is going to do. I find it interesting that there were a lot of Kortrijk fans on social media after the result of the weekend expressing how difficult it is to take a beating like that at any point of the season off anybody, regardless of what your situation is, and that they felt like it was just really, really ugly. I think they're hoping it's a one-off. they started very, very brightly in match day one. You know, they went to the Gemelco and although they were well beaten in the end, were quite bright in the beginning. And this young dynamic side that Ed Stills talked about wanting to play, you can kind of see, I think, you know, there's indications of what he's trying to do there, but nothing is really working for them at the moment. And that's the last thing you need, I think, when you're already facing some significant challenges. And I kind of, my worries for them have gone up a gear or two now, actually, after that.
Yeah, 100%. And the, let me try and work out which goal it was that really did wind me up. The fifth one was the one where I was just like, there just seems to be this thing within football now that everyone feels like they need to play out from the back. And I just don't understand it. Like, look at the players you have. If they're limited against Antwerp, of all teams as well, like, if you are the weaker team up against the stronger team, just don't, you, they can't play out from the back. This team cannot play out from the back. Like, they just couldn't in this game, could they? Like, it was just so obvious, and they just look panicking on the ball. And it's kind of like, you've got to have a different way of playing. Like, not everyone can play out from the back, and that's fine. You don't have to play out from the back. Like, yes, it can look pretty and it looks like, oh, look, yeah, worked on it in the training ground, blah, blah, blah. But when you're then conceding goals, and I'm going to warn people now that this is not the only team I'm going to have this rant about this week, because there were so many of them doing it that I'm just like, if you're the inferior side in a game like that, you are technically inferior as well. Like, Kortrijk are technically inferior to Antwerp. Antwerp are great ball winners in their side. They have Vermeer, and they can bring Youssef off the bench if they want. He can win the ball back really easy. Like, they can press, they can do this sort of stuff. That you're going to lose possession, and it's going to kill you. And like, the fifth one, it's just like, what? The only player I think that kind of can hold his head up high and really put a shift in was Mbayo. I think he put in a massive shift. He was trying all sorts of trying to at least score a goal. I think they only ended up with, what, like four shots to Antwerp's 25. And I'm pretty sure all four of them were probably from him. But I agree on the signing, Scott. I just don't really understand why they aren't getting defenders in after this performance. I don't, like, Ojo, yeah, he's another winger. I don't think they need wingers. They have so many wingers. That's not their problem. They've signed Thierry Ambrose, who's kind of that half winger, half striker. I don't see him as the saviour for them. I don't think he's going to score enough goals. He didn't score enough goals for Oostend. They went down. Sissoko, I mean, they needed a more defensive midfielder. So he fits the build there. But it's another player that got relegated last season, and that does, it means something. I don't know whether he's going to be the right sort of player to come in and kind of have an effect on them. But yeah, this, the first week, I completely agree. I think they were good. They were like, it was an interesting one to watch, but that's because like Kadri was playing with some magic, and then Avenatti scored a really good goal. Avenatti doesn't score that many goals anymore anyway, and he is their leading striker, so that's an issue. But the loss to St. Sudan was probably a bigger wake-up call as well, because it was like, that was a team they're kind of competing against. And then this is just like, yeah, I think you're right. I think Kortrijk fans are well within their rights to be angry. Not like losing to Antwerp's fine, but losing in the manner that they did is just kind of unacceptable. And I don't want to blame Ed still, but they've got to have a plan B for kind of what they're doing. And yeah, I saw a lot of kind of heat coming towards Opera, Atamona, like these kind of signings, just being like, why have we signed these players? They don't look like they're good enough. Jury's still out on Opera. I haven't really seen much of him, and we only saw him for 40 minutes. So again, can't really tell what we got from him. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see kind of the Ojo one. I think it's kind of, they signed, I can't remember who the other guy they signed from Cardiff was, because he's been injured for quite a while. The striker, I think it's Isaac Davis. Mm. I think it's a similar sort of thing. It's because, well, we've got this link between the two clubs. You need a player. His contract runs out in 2024. Cardiff apparently clearly don't want him. They just brought in like someone like Yaku Meite, who I think is a better player in the championship than Ojo's been. So they've got the player that they need. So it'd be interesting to see. At least he's coming with a point to prove, because he's out of contract at the end of the year. But I don't know where the fit is. I don't know if you've got any other thoughts on Kortrijk. Sorry to Antwerp fans, like, you were great, but this is just all about Kortrijk at the moment.
Well, to make matters worse for Kirkcaldy, actually, Ben, of course, Yusuf Çalık, who is, we've always been a big fan of him here at the BFP, who hasn't really been getting a lot of game time since the season started, obviously come back from his loan period at Molenbeek. He came on with 20 minutes of the game to go and only got 11 minutes before coming off injured. And it looks like he's going to be out for a little while now. So one of probably the most technically gifted players in the squad who hasn't been playing anyway, it looks like he's now going to be missing as well. So, it's a very good point you make about Ed Still, Ben, because I think, you know, he was up against it anyway, as we spoke about in our, you know, pre-season preview, that, you know, he's obviously not afraid of a challenge because he's going in there into a kind of chaotic situation with a squad that are it's thin on the ground, low on confidence, and just, you know, doesn't have the depth to be able to go and make an impact at the moment. And I think the most worrying thing is when you set, there's a kind of precedent set at the start of the season where you have a start as bad as this, regardless of who you bring in, it becomes very, very difficult to turn it around. You know, patterns tend to get set kind of quite early, and coaches talk a lot about the importance of good starts, and there's a reason for that, because in a league like this, which is so physically competitive in a number of different ways, I think when you allow yourself to get bullied, like this is actually what happened here. I mean, there's motivational issues and there's a whole range of other factors involved in this game, definitely. But when you allow yourself to be rolled over like this that early with all those other problems, I don't know, I'm trying not to be too negative about them, but there are some major alarm bells ringing around the club at the moment, and I just see further problems for Ed Still. And of course, it doesn't even really allow him any wiggle room either. And I think he's not the only one, to be fair. I think there are two or three coaches at the moment already, only three match days in, who I think are under, you know, a lot of pressure very early on as well.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And whether that's kind of there because of them or not is kind of up for debate, isn't it? But one of those I know that you're definitely referring to is Stephen Defoe at Mechelen. They lost 1-0 to Molenbeek in what was not a great game to watch. Tried to watch it, struggled to watch it. There wasn't much quality on show until basically the 73rd minute. Alexis to start with a wonderful through ball to Michael Byron to get his third goal of the season. Three goals in three games for him. He's definitely taking to the Pro League well. Usen fans just look away now every time he gets on the pitch, to be honest. And I think this game just summed up for me what Defoe just doesn't really have. The players that he's bringing on, that they're just not performing at a level that you'd kind of expect. Nicholas Storm did almost score a trademark Nicholas Storm goal, cutting in from the left and hitting with his right into the low corner. But DeForney's clearly seen the tape and he read that to tip it round. For Molenbeek, it's nice for them to get a clean sheet as well. That's always really, really good kind of starter for them. Things may be starting to look a little bit better after the past two results. Could just kind of get rid of some of that negativity. John Textor in the stand again as well. Like, he's just got his fingerprints all over this one. But Scott, obviously, as someone with those affiliations for Mechelen, it must be quite frustrating to watch kind of what's going on the pitch. And I guess kind of the question is, with three games in, do you think has Defoe changed anything? Has he been able to change anything from last season? Because a lot of the squad are kind of the same. And they've just a couple of new starters, I guess, in Fulan, Belakali, which is good to see him playing, and then Lauber back as well. But the rest of it, the players you're expecting stuff from, Storm, Herlimans and Arabti, you're not getting as much out of them in these first three games you'd have hoped.
Yeah, I mean, they seem very flat at the moment. That performance was, you know, quite a bit out of character for them. There have been, you know, games where they haven't performed over the last few months, even towards the tail end of last season as well. But I hadn't seen anything quite as worrying as the performance this weekend. Stephen Defoe was talking a lot post-match about how unhappy he was about when they were out of possession in this game. And when I was watching it, I was thinking that, you know, the they were trying to, you know, you mentioned being irritated about sides who are struggling to play out from the back. They're another one. I'm not sure they're comfortable with that at the moment, and they've had some issues with that for a little while, I think. I just felt kind of the gap between the midfield and, well, Lauberbach playing on his own just wasn't great. You know, Storm and Marabti kind of not doing enough, not supplying any service, or it was yeah, there was no positives really for them to take out of this game, I think. And yeah, it's a difficult one because I'm not sure whether it's players not responding to a manager or there's a deeper underlying issue going on here, because I don't think Stephen Defour obviously feels the need to be a bit combative in his media kind of interactions at the moment, because he said something really interesting this week when he said, "I think it's time for this club to decide what sort of club it wants to be." And that told me he was feeling the pressure himself. And was trying, obviously, to distract away from him a little bit, understandably. I think he probably, coming out with a comment like that, is feeling a bit frustrated by recruitment issues. I'm just reading between the lines myself here. I think the recruitment so far, I don't think has been great. We've highlighted where is Mori Kanate. We now know he has a visa issue, which is not going to be sorted quickly, from what I understand. So he's going to be missing for a while. They're not able to put a timescale on that yet, which seems extremely odd to me that you bring in a player and then have a major issue like that. I mean, he's exactly the sort of player I think that they need in the middle of the park, you know, who can be that link between the top end and the middle and the back. You know, he can be a real pivot both defensively and offensively for them. So, you know, he's a massive miss. So I'm not sure what's going on with that. That's just a very, very strange situation around his visa there. There's a lot to be worried about there. I mean, I asked Joris a couple of weeks ago whether he'd seen anything in Lauberbach yet that he felt was kind of encouraging, because from what I've seen of him in the opening three games, I'm not seeing anything to indicate he's going to do anything at any point, which again, it's not solely his fault, but the main man at the moment is not showing anything, and it's almost like they've forgotten about the strikers that they brought in last season. You know, Jonas Miladi's obviously come in, and Julian Ngoi, and they appear to be further away from first choice picks than almost ever before. That's what it feels like now, in favour of Lauberbach, who actually doesn't seem to be doing any better. So I think there's a big recruitment question mark overhanging on them. But back to Stephen Defour's question, just briefly, yeah, what sort of club do they want to be? I've highlighted that they need to decide, are they going to look for new investment? Are they going to look for new owners? Obviously, there are two options. Or are they happy being a side who are just happy to be in the division? And they obviously haven't actually decided. And I think they do need to do that, because the challenges that they face now are not going to go away without improved recruitment or investment. And I don't think that is going to happen. You know, moans this week as well from Stephen Defour about having one of the smallest budgets in the league as well. So I think he's very frustrated, and I think the players are feeling a bit of the pressure off that as well, because they don't look like they're enjoying themselves. And for me, it's the old cliche, you know, that Joris doesn't recognise. I don't think as a side they're working hard enough. Molenbeek, on the other hand, just on them for a second, they'll be delighted this week, I think, because they've picked up points against sides that they would probably have, you know, thought that there was something in for them. And they've got a run of fixtures coming up that they look a little bit more challenging now. So they've racked up some points early, which will do them the world of good. And I think they were delighted to see a Mechelen side who were, you know, well below par. And that's exactly the sort of game that Mechelen need to be picking up points in. Strange times at the Aktor de Kazern, I think.
Yeah, no, really strange. And yeah, I was just looking at those the transfers that have come in. Yeah, the Kanate one, I don't really understand how he can have a visa issue when he was here for so many years. Do you know what I mean? Like, it just seems all a bit strange that suddenly he's having visa issues when he was playing in Belgium for years. Like, you'd think it should be quite a formality. Like, here's his old visa. He can play in this country. Like, it's just, yeah, it's a bit odd. And obviously, today, like, Alec Van Horenbeek has gone on loan to FC 20 with, and they've agreed a purchase option. So now they're light at left back and defensively, like, he could kind of slot in loads of different ways. It is strange. And yeah, I agree on the striking front. It is just, it's an odd one. It's kind of like, yes, okay, you've got a small budget, but we've seen kind of around football at the moment that you can still find value if your scouting's good enough. Mm. Let's take Alaba back, for example. Like, he comes from, they sign him from Eintracht Braunschweig. Where Laubach did well was the German third division. Like, he didn't do as well in the second tier. He was great in the third tier. There's a club in Brussels that has hired players from the German third tier that have done very, very well because they've identified that these players will come in and adapt to the situation. So that's what I mean. Like, it's not really, it is kind of, yes, the budget constraints, they will hamstring you, but you can still be clever with your recruitment in kind of how you do it, and sides have shown that they can do it. And that's my little segue to talk about the side in Brussels, who, one of those strikers, obviously Undav's gone off, but another striker that they brought in is on absolute fire at the moment, and that is Dennis Eckhart. He's had to be patient, but he's now starting to reap the rewards for that patience. They hosted a Leuven side who, yeah, we'll probably have to rant about them recruitment as well, Scott, because that's a whole other kettle of fish. Kasper Terho, one definitely one to watch this season. He gave Union the lead with a lovely finish in the 21st minute. My man Camilo Puertas, what a season he's having. He grabbed another goal to make it 2-0. And yeah, Union were absolutely cruising until Tor Steinsson scored an absolute screamer for Leuven to get them back into the game. One of those ones where the corner's played to the edge of the box. He takes one touch. Union players can realise who's on the ball, rush out, but there's nothing they can do as he slams it home. Didn't matter though, Eckhart got two penalties. Nielsen got another penalty. Just Leuven basically falling apart in that sense, and losing this one 5-1. Mark Beers is actually, they're doing one of those fan meeting things this evening as of recording, so the Wednesday evening. And he's like, I completely accept, I'll listen to whatever people have to say, but if people say something that I don't like, I will respond. And then he was asked about, I think they asked him, like, are you frustrated with the squad and a lack of transfers? And he basically, he kind of just said a couple of words, not really committing to anything. And I think Het Nieuwsblad wrote, sometimes, like, what isn't said is basically what has been said. On that front. Yeah. He must be so frustrated because this team just, like, it's kind of, they are a little bit like Mechelen in that sense, of just, they haven't really strengthened in the one area you think they should strengthen. They have brought in Erling Haaland's cousin. I can't remember, like, Brut Benson or something like that. He comes over from Strømsgodset in the Norwegian league, where he did pretty well for Godset. I think he scored 6 goals. Jonathan Brautbrunner, sorry, I've finally remembered his name. 11 goals in 31 games for Strømsgodset, 12 and 16 for Start in the second tier of Norwegian football. And the second tier of Norwegian football, as we know, is not to be sniffed at because there's a real quality coming out of there. But Scott, in this one, Union just continue to roll on, to continue to look dominant. They're losing players left, right and centre, but it doesn't seem to matter. Leuven, on the other hand, fans are frustrated. The manager's frustrated. If he gets frustrated enough to give up on the project, they could be in real trouble because he is the bit of quality that you can back to keep them in the league at the moment.
Yeah, well, you know, you mentioned the fan meeting this evening. There was an informal fan meeting right after this game, still in the stadium, where the Leuven fans stayed behind and you know, had some strong words for their players, even going as far as to sing at one point, "You are shite" of their own side, which, you know, really, really was kind of quite something. Mark Bryce eventually did come out of the dressing room this weekend and go and address the supporters at the Joseph Marion. And I think the conversation was largely around the same issues that you've been highlighting there, Ben, around, you know, recruitment and the fact that offensively this side, we, you know, this is not news to anybody because we've been talking about it every week so far. Offensively, this side is just non-existent at the moment. There's nothing happening at all. In fact, there seems to be a disconnect between both the defence, the midfield, and up top. I think, you know, a totally disjointed side. It's not working. I think there's probably more chance, speaking of managers under pressure, I think there's more chance actually of Mark Bryce getting sacked than there is of the wheel turning for them here. It's very interesting that Erling Haaland's cousins come in, because if he's a third as good as his cousin, then the rest of the league should be very, very worried about Leuven now. No pressure on Jonathan, of course. They've been looking at him for a little while. This one's been on the books for them for quite a while, and it's good for them, obviously, that they've managed to get that over the line after this week. I think the problems that they've been having seem to have been getting worse since the season started, actually. You know, when you look at some of their numbers, they've had quite a lot of the ball in all three games, but in terms of outputs, they've done nothing with it, nothing at all. And, you know, we can debate philosophies around, you know, what are the leading movements in football at the moment, and football fans are doing that a lot in different ways. You know, there is this theory that, are we moving from, you know, possession being, you know, the most important thing in football to flexibility in positions and tactically, and you know, a level of intelligence and gameplay that, you know, is kind of going up a gear or two. You know, it's almost hinting at coaches themselves becoming less important, and I think there's something in that. And Leuven, if that is the case, are definitely a side who are going to struggle, because you know, as we're saying, they saw a huge amount of the ball, a good amount of the ball again this weekend, actually, but did nothing with it. I mean, they only had one shot on target in the whole game, and that was the goal. And the funny thing about it was, just before Thorsteinsson scored that cracking goal, I said, well, this game's over at 2-0 very early on, because they were barely managing to get across the, you know, the halfway line. And yeah, I mean, similar situation to Mechelen, actually. You know, a club who operating with a small budget, not really willing to spend, and again, another similarity, major recruitment question marks as well. I'm not sure there's a plan there. Obviously, they have very strong links to Leicester. Leicester have had their own kind of infrastructure issues after their own relegation, and I, you know, it's probably no coincidence that there is some kind of link here between, you know, them having a kind of poor and quiet summer so far. If I was Mark Bryce, I would be hugely frustrated for different reasons than Stephen Defoe. I think Mark Bryce is quite a smart coach. He's able to get that little bit more out of players than maybe they do ordinarily have in them. But he's up against it a little bit now. I think he'll probably just be hoping that Haaland's cousin coming in can, you know, can work out well for them, and they can kick on and do something now. But they were a side vulnerable going into the start of the season, and I think that's just been underlined now. Union, on the other hand, you know, we're talking about recruitment. Is there anybody better in this league, really, at recruitment generally at the moment? I think there's a very strong argument that they recruit better than anybody else. When you consider how many players have left as well over the summer, they've brought in a lot. They're looking to bring in another two or three possibly before the end of the winter as well. They've got the Algerian player coming in. Can't remember his name, sorry. He's due to take his medical imminently as well. So they're very, very keen to kind of strengthen what they've already got. But they've had a brilliant start. And, you know, we've been saying since they've promoted back to the Pro League, you know, this is a club that everybody can learn from, and the recruitment seems to be working well for them again. Alexander Blessing saying this week that despite the good start, which he's very happy with, he's not resting on his laurels. He wants more squad depth in there. So he's pushing the management very hard to kind of keep going in the same direction that they're going in. And that's such a well-run football club. I've said it so many times, but it's amazing that you can go through. And this was the big question, wasn't it? As far as they were concerned coming into this season, what sort of Union were we going to see this season? Everyone doubted whether they'd be able to. And it's still early. We're only 3 weeks in, and they've started, you know, like they hadn't been away with a new squad effectively, but all of the indications are that they're working their relative magic again, and that thing that everyone's after, that consistency, appears to be kind of right at the fore for them again, and they're not settling for that. They're pushing for more, and these are very encouraging signs, I think.
Yeah, no, 100%, completely agree on that. And I think Dennis Eckhart, just to kind of highlight him for a second about their recruitment as well, is like, it's this lack of kind of short-termism, which is just prevalent in football, especially at the top level at the moment, so much where it's like, if you don't come in and perform instantly within 10 games as a new signing, there's a likelihood you're either going to be loaned out in the January window or sold and loaned out next summer, isn't it? It's just how it works at the moment in football. It's, if you don't perform well enough at the very beginning, you're gone. Hmm. Like, you lose your chance. Eckhart comes in, I think he scored like a handful of goals last season. He's playing second fiddle to obviously Victor Boniface. They then start to prefer Dingler up front to him. Obviously, after Dante Van Zier goes, you think that might be his chance. Yeah, he plays 8 games, scores 2 goals. He scored 4 goals in 3 games. He is their number 9. He is their starting striker this year. Mm. Because they looked to him last season. They brought him in. It didn't come off straight away, but they're like, no, we still believe that he's going to be a player for us next season when we might lose some of these other guys. It's that kind of backing up what they've already got. That's what they're so good at, isn't it? And that's why Yoris, like every year when they've been in this league so far, we've been like, but they've lost those players, so there's probably going to be a dip, because they know these players are going to step up and take those places, like your Puertas, your Terhos, Eckhart. I mean, there's obviously those links between them and Castro Montes, and I just think if you're Ghent and you want to win the title, you do not sell Castro Montes to Union Saint-Gilloise. Like, imagine him in this team. It'd just be perfect fit, wouldn't he, in that kind of that across that four-man midfield that they have. So, yeah, I mean, we'll probably say this almost every week about them. And even if they might not win the league. Like, obviously, they're racing and doing quite well at the moment, but they might finish second or third. But it's just a testament to that recruitment, which the short-termism is something Leuven, obviously, do you remember last season? We kind of joked about it, wasn't it? Where they signed all those players in January and half of them had got, they signed all those players last summer. Half of them had gone by January. And to sum it all up on them, 25th of January 2023, Christian Malinov signs a contract extension. 8th of August 2023, Christian Malinov and OH Leuven part ways. Literally 6 months later, or 8 months later, it's already finished. Mm. And it's just like, where's the thinking there? Like, it happened last summer, and I wouldn't be surprised if some of the guys they brought in this year, that happens to again. Do you know what I mean? Like, it could very much happen again. Like, some of these guys have come in and they'll be gone by January and stuff like that. So, yeah, hopefully Brad Bruins can come off. He's been given the number 9 shirt, so it looks like he'll be that. And Bryce has done well with the number 9s that have played for Leuven. You have to say Gonzalez, Henry, obviously before them, Bruins, like if he's a striker and that more price, we'll get the best out of him. But they're kind of all-round recruitment. We've moaned about it last year, and we'll moan about it again because it's not great. And yeah, Union, they are, you hate to kind of say it because of the links between the two clubs, but they are very similar to Brighton in that sense. Like, their recruitment is spot on. One side that probably hasn't done as much recruitment, and we'd probably lump in with Leuven, Mechelen, Kortrijk, would be St. Truiden, but footballing-wise, they're one of the sides that they've been playing it out from the back, but they've got the youngsters that seem to be able to do it, and it's been really entertaining to watch. So they're not on my rant for this week. They came up against Anderlecht, and in truth, I thought they were the better team in the first half. Fatih Kaya had a decent chance that Dupé saved well. It was Dupé's best game, I think, for Anderlecht that I've seen. He made some really, really good saves. Kept them in the game. And thankfully for Anderlecht, Ndiaye stepped up to finish from a Dreyer free kick. Really nice header from Ndiaye. Dreyer then gets himself sent off, stamping on Eric Bocat. It looked a nasty one. It didn't look malicious. I don't think it looked like it was something he meant to do, but I think as well that he, if I remember rightly, he kind of seemed to realise that he was going to get sent off anyway, that he was just kind of like, yeah, this is, he felt kind of bad or anything. St. Jude, then they did push, but as I said, that man, Dupé, got in the way. Okazaki had a decent chance. Joselfo Barnes had a great chance that he really should have taken, but he couldn't quite get on the end of it. So Anderlecht get away with it. They grab another win. Not the prettiest, but they did it anyway. For St. Jude and Scott, it's another decent performance. I'm looking at Abubakari Koita and I'm like, you need to stay where you are, because he looks to me like he's that kind of big fish, small pond sort of player. That's what he seems to thrive off. Like, he was getting the crowd going and stuff like that. And he was kind of, he's been given this freedom that I don't think he'll get anywhere else. So hopefully he stays, because I think with him on the side and maybe a couple more additions, which I think will happen, they may be okay. It's just the striker. Give them a goal scorer. Kaya works hard, but he's not the goal scorer that they need. And I think they've got something quite exciting going on with Torsten Fink down there. But at the moment, I feel like this could be a very similar sort of performance scoreline from them, where they look good, they have the chances, they don't score and they lose.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because you posed a question on week one. Hang on a minute. Am I seeing the early signs of some expansive football under St. Truden? Is this, you know, the last thing you kind of expected to see? In week two, we saw more evidence of that. And actually, I thought they were brilliant to watch this weekend. I thought they were really, really good. I enjoyed watching them. They were the better side for pretty much the whole game, I felt. And Anderlecht actually simply took their chances. It's one of those games. St. Truden created much more, played the better football, couldn't take any of their chances. Probably could have been a couple up by half time, but for their missed chances. So obviously they need to find an offensive solution to those this newfound creativity they've got. I thought the quality of football they were playing this weekend was really, really good, actually. And it's the third week in a row, actually, that they've been playing that way. So it's obviously how Torsten Fink wants them to play Fink ball, which I'm going to call it, for want of a description, looks very, very good to me. And I think that combination of, you know, that little bit of experience with some exciting youngsters who look actually a lot better than I think a lot of people probably thought they were going to be, it looks like it's going to be a really good combination. And it's kind of ironic because there'd been a disconnect for so long between St. Truden's fan base and the club for that very reason. They complained about the club not almost being Belgian enough and not bringing through enough talent. But everything seems to have turned, and Torsten Fink certainly seems to want to work with the youth, work with it and develop it, and kind of supplement that with some players who have a little bit more experience and maybe quality that they're able to bring in. Their recruitment, seniors recruitment, seems to be a bit of a theme already this week, has actually been, although relatively quiet, has been very good. And I think some of the signs coming out of the club, some of the players talking about how there's a really good feel amongst the squad at the moment, is really, really encouraging, because that tells me these are players who are responding to their new manager, who are enjoying training, are enjoying expressing themselves in the way that he wants them to play. And I think if they can keep playing like that, they're almost certainly not going to have the sort of season that we thought they were going to have, which is really quite exciting, I think. Yeah, they just need to find somebody who can put the ball in the back of the net. And it's ironic, we've said this before, that, you know, they did have a player in Gianni Bruno last season who could do exactly that. I think if they could find somebody like that who is clinical enough on a regular basis, then they could be the surprise package of the season. But they've been really, really good so far. And just looking at that squad kind of quickly, you know, from this weekend, you know, Ryan Van Elden's only 21. Matthias de Lorge's 19. Who else have we got in there? Yeah, there's Smets as well. Matt Smets, he's only 19. So, you know, there's a spine in this side that have their best development yet ahead of them. And to have started so well is hugely encouraging for them. And it's amazing to think that a side like St Truden can come away from a game like this and actually probably ultimately be disappointed not to have won it when they probably should have been the better side and have the better of the chances. Anderlecht actually, you know, kind of dug in, and it was a very hard fought win for them in the end, managed to take one of their chances. I didn't think they were great. I saw some of the same problems surfacing. The good news for them is obviously they've brought in a couple of players since this game this weekend as well, so their squad's looking a little bit better. Brian Reimer talking quite a lot about the pitch post-match as well, which amused me. Obviously try to deflect from difficult questions about a performance again which wasn't great, but the important thing for them is that they're able just to kind of get the points even if they're not playing well at the moment, although I don't think Anderlecht fans will stand for that very long. You know, they like to see good football, so I don't think they're going to want to see a side that wins ugly more often than it doesn't, but the fact that they can is quite encouraging, because this is exactly the sort of game last season that they probably would have lost. Ironic that they should have lost it this weekend as well, but didn't. But yeah, I think I'm probably going to be raving about Finkball for a while, because if they can continue this, they're just, yeah, I really hope they can, because I really enjoyed watching them this weekend, and it was just odd in the end that they didn't get anything out of the game.
Yeah, I'd love to have kind of I wasn't able to do it for this episode, but maybe I'll do it for next week. Like kind of like the comparison between last year's St Truden and this year's St Truden, maybe in like these similar sort of games. Just looking at the passing numbers, I think that's it's so telling. They had, what, 557 passes, I think. Mm-hmm. 490 were accurate. That's an 88%. Anderlecht only had 330 passes. Yes, obviously with the caveat they had 10 men for the last, like, I think it was just over 25 minutes. But for St Truden, 247 in their own half and then 243 in the opposition half. Like, that says a lot to me that they're kind of, their balance between the two, and they're almost at the same amount in the opposition half as well. It is just really, it is good football to watch. There's passing for the sake of passing, but you don't really feel with St Truden that they're doing that. You do feel that they are playing in a certain way, and it is a testament that, like, these youngsters seem to really enjoy playing there. And I think you mentioned about the atmosphere, and you could really feel it with the crowd and the players, that the crowd were actually enjoying what they were seeing. And I think that's a really big thing, because we've seen it two seasons ago when they almost made the playoffs and the crowd sort of started to come back and they started to feel for it. Last year that disappeared again because it was turgid football, let's be honest, like very defensive football, but it wasn't successful. It had been turgid and successful the year before. It's now, when it's turgid and not successful, it's very difficult to watch. I think they're going to get more people coming to watch them in terms of the home fans, because it is great football to watch. And I think that's just, they need to, like you said, they need to capitalise on this by just bringing in someone that can find the back of the net. Even if they can score like 10 goals a season, that could almost be enough. Yeah, you mentioned for Anderlecht, obviously, Augustinsson coming in, Mats Ritz as well, Alexis Flips. They've got some players coming in and building out that squad. So I think I saw, like you probably, a lot of Anderlecht fans being like disappointed with the performance. But at this point, we just need to grab those 3 points. And I think that's kind of the mentality they need to have, is that this side's going to probably look different in a couple of months. So the more points they pick up now, the better. Whereas for St Truden, those kind of early wins could be really, really crucial that they picked up. And yeah, I said it, I think this weekend, I'm very much up for going to the Wasabi Stadium, or whatever it's called these days, because yeah, I think it could be some good football to watch, and it'll definitely be an entertaining game. So kudos to St Truden, and fair play to Anderlecht. That could be a really big 3 points by the end of the season. Let's go to the Amble Idol, where Cercle were hosting Genk. Obviously, our good friend, people from the podcast will have probably listened to our Cercle Brugge special with Carlos Avina. Carlos has been promoted, I guess you could say, to Monaco. Not really surprised, are we, Scott? Like, we've seen inside Carlos's war room, and we know how he operates. And it just felt like he was always destined. If Monaco wanted someone, they should have gone for him. And I think it definitely makes sense. He'll be a big loss for Cercle, I think. But hopefully what he's left behind and what he's set up, like, now it's time to see if that can stand the test of time. They've got good people working there. Like, obviously, we are slightly biased in that sense. We've spoken to a lot of people behind the scenes when we visited them and had a look around. And I think you can say, like, obviously the fans, they didn't agree with everything he did, but compare when he came in to when he's left, I think that's his legacy at Cercle Brugge, isn't it? What the club has become since then. The fact that they can then go into games against a side like Genk and not expect to win, but they're going to be competitive, and they certainly were. Denki really should have scored early on in the second half. He had a fantastic chance, but couldn't find the back of the net. Cercle ended with 13 shots, Genk with 10. It was an even game. The difference was made kind of, I guess, by Christopher Bonsu Bar. His shot in the 70th minute, cannoned off the post, hit Paul Varlason in the back of the head, who had made a couple of good saves before then. He gets the own goal, which I think is always unfair. Cercle did have chances to try and get back into it, but they couldn't quite muster anything. For Genk, obviously a massive, massive 3 points that they desperately needed after, not the best kind of performances over the last couple of weeks, given that loss to Erpen and that. So another one, I guess, kind of like Anderlecht in that sense, Scott, that for Genk, they'll be happy that they got the 3 points. The performances isn't quite there. You guys have spoken about it. We'll always keep speaking about it until they get that second striker in. It's going to be a situation that continues to frustrate fans, but a big, big win for them. And an unfortunate result for Cercle in the end.
Yeah, in truth, there wasn't a lot between the two. It was actually a very, very close game. A mistake, effectively settling it in the end. Genk will be happy to, and maybe winning ugly isn't the right phrase to use, but it's as close as you're going to get, I think. You know, very difficult place to go these days, playing Cercle away at the Jan Breidel. One of the hardest sides to play against in the league, albeit they've had a slightly mixed start themselves. Important win for Genk, I think, and it settles the nerves a little bit. You know, we've been talking a lot about them recently because there have been some kind of growing jitters, I think, around the Sagaica Arena for various reasons. We saw more rotation this weekend as well from Vranken, trying some different things, obviously trying to keep players happy and fit. The striking situation obviously still overhanging their head. There's this Will Paulinho actually be coming back in a potential swap deal with Mike Trezor, all of those sorts of things. Can that deal even be kind of picked apart or worked out? Seems a slightly odd one to me. That's for sure. But yeah, they'll just be pleased to kind of get a win, even if it isn't in the manner that they would like to have done it. They've got a big European game coming up this week, as well, where they're going to try and turn around that tie, which is going to be difficult for them. They're still very much in it, but the way they've been playing recently, it's difficult to see them kind of doing that. So this is a kind of steady in the ship result for them. Ira Sor actually was playing up front, and I know that's something Arioris is always kind of gives him the fear a little bit, because it's not, wouldn't be your first choice, and is more out of necessity than anything else. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see if they can turn around things in Europe this week. Cercle, strange week for them. They've lost Carlos Avina, as you were saying. He's been succeeded by Rembert Vermant, who already knew Carlos, actually. The Mexican scout work from his time in Mexican football, obviously kind of coming in very, very useful there. And I think that there does appear, when you look at that departure, to have been some succession planning going on for a little while there, which I think is quite encouraging in terms of that appointment. And the plan obviously will be to continue with the template that Carlos had laid down. And as you're saying, Ben, now is the true test of how effective that is going to be. Can a new technical director take on the same template and the same approach to things? and have it work in the same way, because the last thing you want as a club is for too many changes when the big things that have been set in place, the culture and the mentality and the way of playing and the general environment around the club was in the right place. And I think that's quite a smart appointment from what I've seen. The signs look kind of quite positive there. A lot of interest in Kevin Denke still at the moment. Don't think he'll leave in this window. And the club don't really want to let him go, but there is some interest in him. I speaking to a couple of agents that I know this week, there are a lot of people watching him and kind of talking to him, which I find interesting. But we know nowadays with all successful transfers, some may happen and get over the line quickly, but the business end of transfers, where you know all of the hard work is actually done in the months leading up to the actual signature, not the closing days of the window. So the real work will be getting on done behind the scenes there at the moment. Yeah, Circle had a bit of a mixed start, but I don't think they'll be too worried about that. I think they still have a very strong squad there and a good one. And I'm not, as I was saying to Joris recently, I'm not worried about the mixed start that they've had.
Yeah, no, completely agree with all that, and I haven't really got much else to add on that one. Let's go to Open. They hosted Club Brugge at the Keurig Stadion, and just a little reminder, if you forgot, the last time these two sides played, Open were trying to avoid relegation and they lost 7-0 and only stayed up because Club Brugge's rival Cercle Brugge beat Zulte Waregem. So the kind of aggregate score of the last two is now 12-0, sorry, terrible maths for me. 12-0 in the last two games. Poor old Gabriel Slonina. Welcome to Belgian football, my friend, because he had to do a lot of picking a ball out of the back of the net on his debut, and it started early. I can't remember who was, maybe it was Buchanan was fouled. Someone was fouled in the box from Club Brugge by Erpen. Scott Olsen stepped up to take the penalty in the fifth minute, make it 1-0. I think Nuhu then did hit the post, actually, forcing a really good save from Simon Mignolet, and that's pretty much all Mignolet had to do. Zinchenko then got his first goal of the campaign and for the league. I think it was it kind of deflected off Pashuis into the back of the net. Buchanan then scored a header at the back post. Stanina could have been taking lessons from Nuruddin, because he just came for a corner, missed the corner, ball came to the back post and went in. These goals just kind of flow into one. Skovorsen scored another, Zinchenko scored another, finished 5-0 to Club Brugge. And another side that want to play out from the back is Erpen, and it's bizarre, really bizarre. Why are you playing out from the back against Club Brugge? Try and get in behind the likes of Mechelen and Spielers, get balls over the top maybe to Nuhu. You haven't got the midfield either, really, to play it out from the back against Club Brugge. Again, I'm just going to keep saying it. You're playing Club Brugge. Like, be clever. You're not being clever by playing it out from the back. It doesn't look pretty when you lose the ball constantly. But saying that, Scott, I guess there's one thing I kind of want to flag with Open. I think this literally sums up their kind of situation at the moment. Is obviously, we know you've got your seven substitutes. Most of the time, you're going to have one goalkeeper on the bench. Club Brugge obviously just have Nordin Jakers. Open have two on the bench. Tom Rufis and Abdul Nuruddin are both on the bench. I think that just sums up how little there is in the squad. Like the substitutes, Florian Kofeld is able to bring on Amadou Keita. I haven't seen anything of him. Teddy Allo, who I'm going to be honest, I haven't really rated since he came over from PSG. Mm-hmm. Isaac Christie-Davies has shown glimpses, but there's something they clearly don't seem to like him, because he's rarely playing for them at the moment anyway. So I think that kind of sums it up for Erpen, whereas, for Ronnie Dyler's side, this was one that I just think, yes, Erpen beat Genk, but I just think Club Brugge just, after what they did to Akureyri during the week as well, I think they were just on a roll, and Zinchenko just kind of, and Van Aken and Olsen just took them to pieces, to be honest.
Yeah, On clubs specifically, there's been some very interesting stuff coming out of Ronnie Dyler this week. He was talking, this is where he got my attention. He was talking about the starting lineup, you know, which he's been changing up a little bit in the first 3 weeks of the season. And he said that the lineup this weekend is pretty close to the, I think, what he thinks is his strongest side at the moment, and the one that he's probably going to go with. And when you look at who started this weekend, I think he's probably right about that. You know, you've got De Kuyper, Spielers, Mekla and Buchanan at the back. That's probably their strongest back line, Onyedika and Vettelsen in front of them. Good that Vettelsen's getting to start regularly, because it's been not a slow start, but he's had a... You would have expected him to have been dropped in straight away, and he kind of hasn't. So the fact that, you know, he is now is hugely encouraging, and not just because I flagged him up as being one of the players to watch this season. Now he could really, you know, really be, you know, light up this league, and I think he will potentially yet. Yeah. And then up top, obviously, Zinkernackel's just come in. The other side, you've got Olsen, then Van Aken in between them, and then, you know, Rodriguez up top, who looks like he's going to be Ronnie's number one choice. That's a strong side, I think. That is a strong side at any level. The Zinkernackel one situation kind of amused me a lot, because obviously, understandably, the Standard fans didn't take very well to somebody else from Standard coming to club. And I was actually contacted by a Standard fan just after that transfer was confirmed, who wanted to make the point to me that Zinkernackel is not good enough to play for club, regardless of what he thinks. And that did make me smile this weekend when he scored not once but twice. And when you look at his performance this weekend, he looks every inch the sort of player who, you know, he's been there for a while actually. Talking about how big the club is and how it was difficult to turn down the opportunity to go there as well. A lot of this is to do with his relationship with Ronnie Dyler as well, of course. I think that's probably the single biggest factor. But I think that Standard fan made a misjudgment there. I think all the indications were he was going to be able to go in there and contribute, because what Zinkernackel was good at Standard, he's already brought to club, and you know he scored his first couple of goals, and there are goals in Philip Zinkernackel actually. That's the thing I wanted to kind of underline. But yeah, I mean they're starting to look quite good, club, I think. And Ronnie Dyler's obviously now at a point where he feels like he's got quite a good handle on the squad, and that early rotation, if you like, has kind of made way for the players that I think he's decided these are the ones that I want to start on a regular basis. And he was also being very complimentary about Roman Yaremchuk this week as well, saying that absolutely he's got a role here and can fit into this side. And I had a sneaky suspicion that Yaremchuk was exactly the sort of player that Ronnie Dyler would be able to get inside his head, and if anybody can rehabilitate him and kind of get him back to the levels that we all know he can play at, although he's not going to be first choice, I don't think, regardless this season, it's Ronnie Dyler. But he's been getting inside these players' heads, I think, and managing to lift the club back up again, you know, and bring an air of professionalism to the place that I think, in my view, professionalism might not be the right word, but a degree of, kind of a way of behaving, if you like, and carrying yourself that the club had been missing. And I think that's kind of quite significant, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I think it's ominous signs for everyone else at the moment with what club are starting to do. They're starting to find the back of the net. Starting to, like you said, he's found his best 11, and that's, yeah, worrying for everyone else, I think, because that side could really get rolling by the look of it, because there's so much quality in it. Obviously, there'll be bigger challenges than Erpen. Like, Erpen were really poor, and they will be poor this season. We know that. But you still got to go and dispatch them, because not everyone has so far this season. Two sides that have had pretty meh starts to the season. One definitely really meh. In Standard Liège, they travelled to Charleroi for the derby. And if anything's going to get you going, it's this game. Like, it's always a heated atmosphere. Donovan and Ilamar Ichu were at each other all game, despite being... They had the little captain handshake at the beginning, and that was it. They were just kicking each other and pushing each other all the time. Donham's just like... He's like that kid on the playground that just really used to wind you up, because he's always getting into scraps everywhere, just absolutely loves it. I think that's exactly why they've made him captain, to be fair. Charlotte had the best of kind of the early chances in this one. Dan Heyman looked like he really wanted to score, but just couldn't. And then they got hit on the break. Newman, Wilfred Kanga holding the ball up, flicking it onto Dennis Stlagas. He runs through. Coffey, I don't know what he was doing. It was very unconventional in that he didn't really like spread his body and go down. He just like tried to kick the ball away from Dragas, but Dragas had already shot and just like rolled into the back of the net in front of the standard fans as well. So that gave them a lot of joy. Second half, Charlotte were pushed. And in the very final last couple of minutes, Ngoi pulls back. I think it was the bag. It was pretty soft, in my opinion. It was definitely a shirt pull, so yeah. But he did fell down like a sack of spuds, as they say. Ngoi gets sent off for that. Ilemar Licha then gets himself sent off for slapping, I can't remember who he slapped in the face, but he slapped someone in the face. He'd had enough by then. He scored the penalty and then had enough. He gets himself sent off as well. A feisty one, Scott. But a game that definitely, you can tell there's a lack of quality in these two sides at the moment. And Benzer looked pretty decent for Charleroi. For Standard, it was, yeah, there wasn't anyone really getting you off your seat with how they were playing. It was just more they were good and willing to scrap and do all that sort of stuff. But that, yeah, it just feels like these two sides are kind of still working out what their identity is, which sounds a bit strange when you know Mazou's been there for a while now, but it was, yeah, not the best of games, but because it was a derby, it was like engrossing to watch, I guess we could say.
Yeah, I think some of the encounters between these two, who we know don't like each other very much, recently over the last couple of seasons have been, you know, as fiery as it gets, you know, a real intensity, and that's kind of been the main story of these games. There's not been a lot of football played, literally, between these two recently. That's what it feels like to me. And you kind of, it's a bit like batting down the hatches when these two tend to play each other for that reason as well. Get your steel hat on, everybody, because you never know what's going to be coming your way. And it felt a bit like that again, you know, where the niggle between the two was almost more important than the actual football. They've not been much of a spectacle, these games in recent times. A lot of needle again this weekend, not a lot of football played. I thought Charleroi were the better side, to be honest. They looked much the better of the two, in my view. I thought they were more likely to win it. Didn't, obviously. Standard scoring was actually quite a good goal on the break. Not managing to hold on. And Standard, you know, it's the old deja vu thing that we've been having for ages. I think they're struggling at the moment for a number of reasons. But I want to highlight a kind of positive for them, I think, which has not had that much attention, and that is Zeno van Huisden. We know how good he can be and the potential that he has. I think he has been very good since he came back in the opening three games. I think his fitness is obviously improving, which is really, really important, because it's one of the reasons he's kind of come back to the club. But his actual performances as well have been really decent so far, which I think is really encouraging for them. You know, his tackle rate, his passing rate, his interceptions are all up. In high numbers, which is encouraging, and he's a big takeaway for them, I think, a big positive, and which we shouldn't underestimate as well when you think about it, because he's a big influence on the squad for a player who's still relatively young. So I think that's something for them to hold on to at the moment. But you know, 1 point out of nine is almost as bad as it gets, and I think there's a bit of pressure on Carl Lofkins already, because Ronnie Dyla left the club simply because he felt they weren't showing enough ambition and didn't have the confidence in 777, the owners, that they were serious enough about investing in the right ways in order to allow the club to kind of develop. Carl Lofkins has gone in and said, look, I know I'm going to be working with a lot of young players here and developing them, and that's going to take time. He's obviously at a club where he's not going to get the time. So regardless of whether he's the right profile for them now, and in a way he probably is, the pressure's on him much earlier than he probably expected. And this is a bit, Standard fans won't like what I'm about to say here, but the whole question around was Ronnie Dyla right or not to leave Standard, I think he's already been vindicated, to be honest, because the reasons he left have been completely reinforced by what we've seen transpiring at Standard since the start of the season.
Yeah, I think Standard fans would probably agree in the sense that they are as frustrated with the board and the lack of investment as well. I can't imagine there's a Standard fan out there who's like, yes, I'm happy with the moves we've made. And there still is time for them to make some more. It's quite an interesting one about, like, yeah, I get the philosophy of bringing these young players in and developing them, but then you've got your side in the Challenger, which is kind of set up for that anyway. So you could be bringing in some very, like, even younger players to put into that to develop them there while still being a competitive side in 1A. So I just feel like that's kind of what, when you've got that side in the CPL, why not use it for what it's for, which is that sort of thing? Because not all these players, young players that you bring in, are going to come off. There's some that obviously are good enough that they can just step straight into it. And we're hoping we'll see that, especially from some of the guys that came from the English academies. It'd be nice to see them just be able to take off and do that. But I think you can get into a bit of a sticky situation. And to be fair, they've obviously signed Kanga as that sort of player he's not young enough that he's going in the CPL. He's kind of 25, 26, kind of pushing into the kind of prime of his career. So he seems like a relatively, like, sensible option. But yeah, I think it's going to be interesting again to see what their squad looks like at the end of the month. And yeah, if Hoofkens is given that time, because in theory he should, because of what their philosophy is. If the players are going to be given time, you kind of want to make sure that they've got the manager in place that's going to be working with them consistently. It's bad for them if you keep chopping and changing, it will harm their development. So yeah, it's kind of like a catch-22, I guess, for them. Final game of the weekend was Ghent against Vestalo. A familiar scoreline, 28th of April in the playoffs, Ghent won 3-1. 27th of May in the playoffs, Ghent won 3-1. And then on the 13th of August, 2023, not in the playoffs anymore, but Ghent won 3-1. Madsen gave Vestalo the lead from the spot. Then Watanabe scored from a corner. Kuipers scored and he scored again from the spot late on. His second goal is another case of the side playing out from the back when they don't have the squad ability to do that. Or they shouldn't have done it in that situation. It was just stupid. Bolat with a terrible, terrible pass gives the ball straight back to Ghent, who work it into the box, and Kuipers taps it in to make it 2-1 at that point. So they basically throw away the lead trying to play it out from the back. Against a side like Ghent as well, that have that kind of dynamism up front with Kuipers, Orban, Hulsager, Samwise, Hong, like these guys that are willing to press and willing to get up the pitch. I think you kind of, yeah, just play it out at the right time, please. I'm not going to keep going on about it. It's just, it's getting a little bit frustrating in this kind of, we are always going to play it out from the back rather than just kind of, yeah, being sensible with what's going on. Scott, I think that the kind of how I see Ghent at the moment is like, this is a title-winning attack at this very moment in time. This is a title-winning attack, and I don't think you can say it's not. They've got goals, they've got everything you need, but none of us, I think, are thinking that this is what it's going to look like at the end of the transfer window. Someone's going to leave, and that's going to be where the issue comes, and that's where I'm kind of hesitant to think that Ghent can kind of go on and win the league, because at the moment this team looks great, but you're just kind of looking at it like at some point Kuipers might go or Orban might go. Both might go if the bids are good enough. So it's kind of taking every Ghent performance at the moment with a pinch of salt, enjoying it. But I feel like at the end of the season, the Buffaloes fans are going to look back and be like, ah, what could have been if we'd kept that side together that we had at the beginning of the year?
Yeah, this is such a frustrating one to see kind of unfolding, isn't it? Because they've had a brilliant start and perfect start, and the squad depth is there all over the pitch now to, like you say, to stake a real claim. And it's probably the biggest question hanging over the Pro League at the moment, the issues around Gift Orban in relation to Ghent, because there's a lot of interest in both Orban and Kuipers at the moment. I don't imagine in a million years that both will go. I just can't see them allowing that, even if good offers come in. Orban's the one, obviously, to keep an eye on, because he's the one, you know what I mean, that's going to go for in the region of 30 million. That seems to be the magic number, somewhere around about that. The Buffaloes have already turned down what I think is a pretty good offer for Hugo Kuipers, around 14 million with some add-ons. I understand they want maybe closer to 20 for him with add-ons. What would make things very interesting would be if they did receive that. You're in a real dilemma then. It's strange, isn't it? I mean, imagine a scenario where both do go and Ghent are sitting on, you know, 50 million plus to kind of play with in bank, but, you know, not really being in a position necessarily to replace either of them. I don't think they can afford to lose both. That's my view. I think if they lose both, then hopes of doing anything this season are gone in an instant, regardless of what your plans are. One of them will go, I think. Orban is almost certainly going to go, I think. Kuipers is the one that I think Van Eisenbroek knows is probably staying, and it seems to have indicated he's kind of quite comfortable with that. I think the interest in Kuipers actually helps drive Orban's price up a little bit as well. It's a nice position for the club to be in. A lot of strength and depth in that squad, as we've said. And I think even without Orban, I think they could still do something quite special this season. Not saying they'll win the title, but I think they could put in a real challenge for it, even without him. Because we've kind of forgotten a little bit about Tarik Disadale, of course. He's, you know, he had that horrendous injury, which he came back from towards the tail end of last season. They were slowly working on his fitness, you know, so that he didn't have any setbacks, and he's just kind of rumbling around in the background at the moment. And I think that's why Big Hein and Ghent are reasonably relaxed around all of the speculation at the moment, because such is the depth in that squad now that they probably in truth could lose Orban, although you wouldn't choose to, obviously, and still be absolutely okay. Dare I say it. I think Gift Orban's potential big move, Tottenham obviously very interested. There's things happening behind the scenes there at the moment. We were contacted this week by somebody who said, what do we think of this? Could he make an impact in the Premier League? I'm not so sure. It may be his dream move, but I think this is a player who rather strangely has taken no time at all to adapt in Scandinavia and in Belgium, but might find adapting to the Premier League a little bit more difficult than he has anywhere else. Although he's the sort of player who relishes proving people wrong, so he's probably going to go to Tottenham, maintain his scoring form and prove me wrong in that one. But yeah, I would like to see Ghent to continue this form, because Ghent are a side that have flattered to deceive for a long time now. And yeah, a lot to happen over the next couple of weeks as the window begins to narrow.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's the Orban to Premier League one. It just worries me, because it's what I was talking about earlier. That's where, like, it's the league that's the king of the short termism, isn't it? The Premier League at the moment, where if he comes in, doesn't score quick enough, it'll be in Turkey before he knows it. Do you know what I mean? It's like, that's just how it seems to be at work. If they're gonna sell him, get him back on loan or something like that. He's so young still. He's got so much time. I'd be like, look, mate, you could stay here, probably come and help us win the league, and then you're going to get your dream move. Mm. Like, more clubs will be interested if you can show you can do it again. For Kuipers, I mean, I know his goal-scoring record was good, but then I looked at it again, and it's 43 goals in 62 games. It's actually ridiculous. And if we weren't talking about Orban as much, because of how, like, explosive he was coming into the scene, like, Kuipers at Ghent has been, he's very quickly closing in on 50 goals already, which is incredible when you think about how he struggled at Olympiacos. He was good at Mechelen. He wasn't great. He was good. 13 goals in 36 games. Like, he was good. Did not see this coming, but he's just, something's unlocked in him over these last couple of seasons. And it's great to see. It is really great to see. And, like, yeah, long may it continue for him. And Ghent, he did used to play for Solang, which I believe probably were in the second tier or the third tier at that point. The second tier obviously kicked off this weekend. Scott, we're going to swap roles. You'll be the host and go through the scores on this one, and I'll give some opinion on some of the games and goals that I saw.
Yeah, well, this weekend was, as everybody knows, the big opening weekend in the Challenger Pro League. And I think we learned some quite interesting things already in match day one, and has been backing up everything we've been saying to everybody for ages about get watching the Challenger Pro League, everybody, because it's getting more and more interesting all the time. So this weekend we saw some quite interesting results and a few surprises as well. Anderlecht Futures lost 3-1 at home to Beerschot. Sarang won convincingly 3-0 at home against SL16. Nicky Ian's Club Next won quite an entertaining game against Liège 3-2. RFC Liège, one of the newcomers, lost 1-0 at home to Timmy Simons Dender. Patro Eisden, another one of our newcomers, they won convincingly 3-1 at home against Denza. Jongenk beat Beveren in one of the surprises of the weekend. And that game was particularly interesting for something I'm going to come back to in a minute, which is really kind of, in many ways, the story of the week. Oostend lost 1-0 at home to Lommel. Lommel's Hungarian starlet, Jalan Vanksa, scoring a really, really good goal right at the end. Fantastic goal right in the edge of the box. And everybody's early title favourites, Zulte Waregem, losing convincingly 3-1 at home, no less, to newcomers Frank Baran, in which there was a brilliant goal. Go and check out Clement Tainmont's assist for, I think it might have been Frank's second goal. That's as good assist as you will see in any league, in any division, almost any season. Outrageously good stuff. Almost from the halfway line. He's out wide, plays the ball across. And when I first saw it, actually, I'm going to go on about this for a minute. I'm going to rant about this because I couldn't believe it. I thought it was more of a one of those crosses, but he absolutely knew what he was doing there. Really, really good. We shared it actually on our Twitter account, so if you scroll back on our feed a little bit, you will find it. But yeah, the two early title favourites in Zulte and Beveren both losing somewhat surprisingly this weekend, and it just kind of underlined to me how competitive this league is, how intense and how physical it is, and how you have to roll your sleeves up and be ready every week, otherwise you're going to get done by whoever you're playing. There's no room for manoeuvre. Coming back to Beveren's defeat for a second to Jongenk, story of the week for me, Jongenk putting out probably the youngest ever Belgian professional starting 11 with an average age of 17.5, 2 15-year-olds starting the game as well, and one of those 15-year-olds actually provided the assist for what turned out to be Jongenk's winning goal. Remarkable story behind that game. We know how good the Genk Academy is, but that's an incredible story, I think. And yeah, I mean, I suppose that's a very early warning to the Beverins and Zultas of this world that, you know, you need, as I was saying, to roll your sleeves up and be ready to go now.
Yeah, score of that was old Kelvin John. Maybe keep scoring, you might earn a spot in the first team because they need strikers, and maybe you could do it there. Shout out to the Patro Eisden Denzer game. That was kind of the one I saw a few of the highlights for. Suleiman Ann, everyone knows I love Suleiman Ann. He scored for Denzer. But then Stefan Ingi Sigurdarson, the man from Breiðablik in Iceland, came off the bench to score. I thought he scored twice, but the third one's been given as an own goal. After we recorded, obviously we'd seen his kind of like stats for the preview. I went and spoke to the guys at the Besta Liga podcast, and I think they just called it the Besta podcast, covering Icelandic football. And they were like, yeah, this kid's going to be good. I wrote an article for him on Get Football if you are interested in kind of seeing what they actually said to me. But yeah, he exploded in the second tier of Icelandic football, then exploded in the first tier this season of Icelandic football. And he could be one of those guys that just keeps on stepping up and stepping up when he needs to be. So yeah, some interesting results. I think you're right, Scott. I think seeing those kind of the favourites lose already, it just shows it's going to be a tough season. Bloody Sarang winning 3-0 and being top of the league. Like, who would have predicted that? They're playing Beveren next weekend, so that could be an interesting one there. And then Biersch got Zultavaregem now needing that win. So, yeah, always lots to look out for in the Challenger Pro League. And that probably wraps it up for this one this evening. Scott, as always, it's been a pleasure.
It has indeed. I'll see you next week, everybody, and you too as well, Ben.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll be back next week for another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast. In the meantime, if you like what you listen to, please do leave us a review on your podcast app of choice. It really does help. And if you've got any questions for us that you want us to answer, we are absolutely open to those. So please do get in touch. We'll try and answer them either on the next episode or via whichever means you get in contact with us. But as always, thank you for listening, and we'll see you very soon on another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast.